Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Megillah Daf Chof Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the very bottom of Daf Chof Hei Amud Beis, where the new perek begins 2 lines from the bottom. Today we have the schus of beginning the 4th and last perek of Maseches Megillah. Before we begin the Mishnah, let's glance at the side where we have a topic heading. We've written Mechiras Uknias Dvorim, the sale and the purchase of items Hakshurim L'Kedusha that have some type of association with holiness. L'Mokom Tefila, place of prayer, U'L'Sefer Torah, things that are related to Torah scrolls. Haklal B'Noisei Zehu, the rule regarding this topic is Malin B'Kedush V'Loi Maridin. We rise up in sanctity levels, and we do not decline. In other words, you can always sell up, but not sell down. Naturally, a Torah scroll would stand at the top of the pyramid, that being the holiest item that we have nowadays. The Mishnah, B'nei Ho'ir Shemochu Rechoivo Shel'ir, a community that sold its town's plaza, we'll say. A rechova is an open area where at the time that people would observe public fasts due to the lack of rain or possibly other matters, the public would gather in this area, the rechova shel'ir. So it was a place that at times was associated with public prayer. So one who sold this area, loikhin bedomov beis haknesses, the money can be used to, as we said in our introduction, to buy an actual shul, an actual synagogue. Beis haknesses, if they sold a synagogue, loikhin teva, with that you can buy an aron kodesh. A teva is a box, literally. It's the item in which a Torah scroll would be kept when it's not in use. Teva, if they sold an Oron Kodesh, loikhin mitpochos. So these mitpochos were cloths that would be wrapped around a Sefer Torah, used in the context of the Sefer Torah. So it's closer to the Sefer Torah, if you will, than the Oron Kodesh. Mitpochos yikhu svarim. If they sold mitpochos, so one would purchase Sfarim. Sfarim is a reference to scrolls, not actual Torah scrolls, rather scrolls of the prophets and the writings, Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Sfarim lokhin Torah, if holy scrolls like Nevi'im and Ksuvim were sold, so once again, you buy up. You would use the money to purchase a Sefer Torah. Avol, and now in reverse. Avolim mochru Torah lo yikhu Sfarim. If they had to sell a Sefer Torah, you're not allowed to buy Sfarim with that. Sfarim being, again, the Nevi'im and Ksuvim scrolls. Sfarim lo yikhu mitpochos. Mitpochos lo yikhu teva. Teva lo yikhu beis haknesses. Beis haknesses lo yikhu es horechov. V'chein b'mosrehem. The same halacha applies, the same rule applies to leftover money. Let's say they sold scrolls of Nevi'im and Ksuvim, and they had more than enough money to buy a Sefer Torah. So they have leftover money. What do they do with the leftover money? So Rashi says they are not allowed to buy something having less kedusha than the item that they just sold. The Gemara. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, the Nosei, Machlokes Tanoim Beinyan Rechovos Shel Ir Im Yesh Bo Kedusha. We'll see a Tanaic controversy regarding the town Ruchovok, town plaza, as we mentioned earlier. B'nei ho'ir shemochu Ruchova shel'ir. This was a quote from the beginning of our Mishnah. Omar Rabo Bar Chana, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Zu Divrei Rabbi Menachem Bar Yossi Stumta. This Mishnah is an unnamed Mishnah, but its author is Rabbi Menachem Bar Yossi. Stumta means an unnamed source. And generally speaking, an unnamed source carries with it a great deal of authority. So Rabba is pointing out that there is an author to this unnamed source, and it's Rabbi Menachem. Avo Chachomim Oimrim, Horechoiv Ein Boi Mishum Kedusha. The Chachomim disagree. There is a majority opinion that disagrees. And they claim that the Rechoiv, this public area in the street, or in the town plaza, does not have sanctity. The Rabbi Menachem Bar Yossi, my time, what is his basis of saying that a street or an open town plaza has sanctity? Since the public does pray in them during public fast days. The next word is discussed in Rashi as whether or not it's part of our girsa. So we're going to just keep things simple and mention the one point that it is used for prayer, giving it some level of sanctity, and that's in the mind of Rabbi Menachem. Rabbonon, hahu akroi be'amad Rabbonon, say it's not something that's used on a regular basis. You could have years going by where there's no use of the Rehovah Shilir as a prayer venue, of course, if there's ample rain. Therefore, as far as the Chachamim are concerned, if it's not used on a regular basis, it doesn't have sanctity. It doesn't have any sanctity. Beis HaKnesses, Loikum Teva. The Mishnah mentioned that if a synagogue is sold, so with that money you can buy an Oron Kodesh. Omar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Om Rabbi Yonison. Lo Shonu, the teaching of the Mishnah that a synagogue can be sold, Elo Beis HaKnesses Shel Kforim. This is with reference to shuls that are in villages. Villages are small locations where the only people that are praying there are the local village residents. It's not associated with people coming from other locations. Avo Beis HaKnesses Shel Krochem, but synagogues of large cities, Kevan Deme Alma Osule, since people come there from all over, Lo Motsu Mezavni Le, Dehave Le Derabim. It cannot be sold because it's considered belonging to the general public. So that you don't have a clear owner present to acknowledge or to accept the sale. True, it's located in a particular city, but it belongs to people from all over who says that they would approve of the sale. Omer Ravashi, Hai Beknishto Damasa Mechasya. The Ravashi says that the synagogue of the city of Mechasya, Af Algab de Me'alma Osu, even though people do come from all over, Af Algab de Me'alma Osu La, Kevon de Adaito Didi Kosu, since they're coming with me in mind. They know that I am the authority in this community, and they come because of my presence here. I bo'ino mizavnino lo. If I should decide, I can sell it. So we have an interesting contrast. We have it's a synagogue in a large area, in a populated area, and nevertheless, the sale possibility exists because people who come realize that they realize the clear authority of Rav Ashi over the place. Meisvei, And you can see we have on the side of the Gemara, we didn't read it a moment before, but the topic heading is this very point, Dino Shurab Yonason, Osir Limkar Beis Knesset Shel Rabim. And under the Mivneh heading, where the triangle is featured on the side, Kushios Al-Hanal, now we're going to challenge that point from sources. Meisvei. Here we have a Tanaic source, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Meisvei Beis HaKnesses, Shel Tursayim, Shoyi B'Yerushalayim. There was a synagogue owned by the associated with the owners of the Tzorfei Nechoshes. These were coppersmiths, the coppersmiths' synagogue that was in Yerushalayim, Shemachrua L'Rebbe Eliezer, the Asabo called Tzorchov. It was sold to Rebbe Eliezer, and he used it for all of his needs. V'hohasam, Dekrochem Have, that was a synagogue in Yerushalayim, which is a large city, and you see that it was sold. So this is a challenge to Rabbi Yonason's din. So the Gemara answers regarding that particular shul that even though it was located in Yerushalayim, nevertheless, Ahu Beknishta Zuti Have, it was a small shul, it was a small synagogue. The Inhu Avduha, and those Torsayim, those coppersmiths, they made it. So it doesn't have the characteristics of the type of shul, the type of synagogue that Rabbi Yonason was describing before. Meisvei, we raise a question again. Now here we need a word of introduction. The topic at hand is not directly shul related, but in the course of the discussion, so we'll see how shuls are brought in. We're going to be discussing the issue of Tumas Negoyim or Nige Batim. These are Negoyim that can affect structures. And in the course of the discussion, the point that is worth emphasizing is that only something that is privately held, and when we use the term private, we mean to the exclusion of something that's of a general public nature. Public meaning an unlimited public type nature. Something that's totally public is not subject to this form of discoloration. When we speak about Tumas Negoyim, the Torah speaks about a discoloration appearing on the walls of structures. So, with that in mind, let's begin the source and then see how the question arises. Meisvei, Beveis Eretz Achuzaschem. Achuzaschem mitame b'negoyim. This posuk of Beveis Eretz Achuzaschem is taken from the context of Negoyim, which maybe we didn't use the word before, but maybe more of you are familiar with the word tzoras. Nige botim, tzoras of structures. This phenomenon afflicts Eretz Achuzaschem. That means something that you own, something that you inherit. Achuzaschem mitame b'negoyim, v'ein Yerushalayim mitame b'negoyim. Your personal holdings can become afflicted with negoyim, but Jerusalem cannot be affected by negoyim. Omer Rabbi Yehuda, ani lo shamati elo mokoyim mikdosh bilvad. And Rabbi Yehuda says, I didn't hear this exemption from negoyim other than Mokom Mikdosh, which would refer to the Beis HaMikdosh, that alone. Ha Bote Knesios Bote Midrashos Mitamin. However, synagogues and Torah study halls, they are subject to Negoyim. Am I? Why should they be subject to Negoyim? Ha De Krochim Havu. Are they not Krochim? Are they not part of the city's entities? They are public. And is this not then a challenge to Rabbi Yonason's din? Here we see that according to Rabbi Yehuda, according to the Tana Rabbi Yehuda, synagogues could be afflicted by Negoyim. That would indicate that they are of a private nature, contrary to the rule that Rabbi Yonason was trying to teach, that once something is public, once something is krochim, it is considered public. Here we see something that is krochim oriented, city oriented, and yet it's viewed as private. So the Gemara responds, Emo, restate this. Omer Rabbi Yehuda, ani lo shomati I heard about tumah exemption only elamokum mikudosh bilvad, not mikdosh, but mikudosh, that which is sanctified, and that includes synagogues. So that, as far as we are concerned, we don't have a challenge to Rabbi Yonasan from what the Tana Rabbi Yehuda teaches, because as far as the Tana Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, things that are that have sanctity, like synagogues, in fact, are not considered your holding, and hence they're not subject to Negoyim. So that the exemption, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, is not limited to the Beis HaMikdash, but any place that has sanctity. Now, there is a machlokas that we saw, the Tanakhama versus Rabbi Yehuda, concerning Jerusalem. And what happens now in the structure of the Gemara is that it gets off onto this issue. What is the analysis of this machloikis tanoim? We have a bracketed section, as you can see, with our markings. And on the side, there's a starred note, achrei ha-sograim, after the brackets, ha-gamor choyzeres linen isur mechira shekoruch biyiridas kedusha. The Gemara will get back to the topic of sale prohibition, which involves a descent in sanctity level. The socha sograim, ha-gamor masbira machloikis tanakam rebuta, we're going to, within the brackets, discuss the machlokes tanoim concerning, let us say, a house in Jerusalem. According to the Tanakama, a house in Jerusalem is not subject to Negoyim. According to Rabbi Yehuda, a house in Jerusalem is subject to Negoyim. So that's what the Gemara will deal with in the bracketed section. If you skip momentarily to the second line from the bottom, Omar Rova Lo Shanu, this goes back to the issue of the prohibition of descent in sanctity vis-a-vis sales. This restriction is Lo Shanu Elo Shelo Mochru Shiva Tuve Ir B'Maimed Anshir. Mochru Shiva Tuve Ir B'Maimed Anshir. If it was sold in the with the approval of the seven town representatives, then Afilu, the Gemara at the top of Amud Beis says, "Lemishta be shichro, lemishtach be piri shab yedomi." You can sell a synagogue even for a place where beer would be sold, or a place for setting fruits out to dry. Now let's go back to the bracketed section, and we ask B'mai Komifligi, what are the Tanoim in the source regarding the Goyim arguing about? Tanakama Sovar. The Tanakamu says that all of Jerusalem is not subject to the Goyim, being that it's not Achuzaschem, it's not considered your holding. Tanakama holds Lo Nischalku Yerushalayim L'Shvatim, that when Israel was divided out in the time of Joshua and the time of Yoshua, the land of Israel was divided amongst the different tribes. Jerusalem was not part of that division. It was something that is associated with all of Israel. For Behuda Savar Nischalku Yerushalayim L'Shvatim, according to Behuda, it was divided amongst the tribes, and in fact we'll see that the tribes of Yehuda and Binyamin, each one had a holding in part of Jerusalem. Ube Plukto Dehani Tanoi, and the Machlokis that we just mentioned parallels another Machlokis Tanoim. And on the side we have a crown marking, which indicates Machlokis Tanoim Im Yerushalayim Nischalku L'Shvatim. We're going to be featuring this topic as something that's under Tanaic controversy. The Desanya, we have a one source, and it says this source, you will see, describes part of the Temple Mount, which was located in Jerusalem. Part of it was associated with the tribe of Judah, and part of it was associated with Binyamin, indicating that it was divided. The crown shape that appears later will indicate something to the contrary, that it wasn't divided. So this Tana says, Ma hoya b'chelko shel Yehuda, what part of Jerusalem was in the section of Yehuda? Har habayis halashochus v'azoros, the Temple Mount, the lashochus are offices, and azoros are courtyards. when we speak about courtyards, there was the Ezras Noshim, Ezras Yisrael, Ezras Kohanim. Uma hoya bechelka shel Binyamin, what was in Binyamin's section? So he had, as part of his section, Ulam, Vehechal, Ubeis Kotshei HaKadoshim. These refer to the structure part of the Beis HaMikdash, that were the covered structure parts, the Ulam, the antechamber, the Hechal, the main sanctuary that contained the menorah, the candelabra, and the golden altar, the Mizbech HaZov, and the Shulchan of the Lechem Aponim, the bread that contained the 12 showbread loaves, Ubeis Kotshei HaKadoshim, and the Holy of Holies. Ritzua Hoysa Yoitzes, there was a strip of land, of, in this case we'll say courtyard floor. There was a strip of a floor of the courtyard of the where the mizbeach stood, the external courtyard mizbeach stood, that went from Yehuda into the portion of Binyamin, ubo mizbeach banui, and on that strip, the courtyard altar, the altar that was used for the sacrifices, was built. Binyamin HaTzadik mitzdarale b'chol yoyim levoyla. Binyamin HaTzadik is a reference to the original Binyamin, the son of Yankiv Avinu, the forerunner of the original tribe, Binyamin. He was upset every day. He knew prophetically that this was going to happen, and he wanted the mizbeach to be built in his portion. The vola means he wanted to absorb it. Shenemar choyfeif alav kol hayom. That's the pasuk in the context of the tribe of Binyamin. He was hovering over it all every day. Lefikach zocha Binyamin v'nasu shpiz chon l'shchina, because of Binyamin's great desire to have the altar completely in his domain, so he was granted the merit of having the Holy of Holies in his domain. There is more detail to this issue of the strip of land and the Mizbeach, etc. Rashi gets involved with that, but for our purposes, we're learning the text of the Gemara, and you get the spirit of things. Lefikach zocha Binyamin v'nase ushpizchon l'shchina, as a result of Binyamin's great desire, so he became, ushpizchon is the host of the divine presence, which is, as we said, a reference to the Kodshim. So, as we said earlier, this Tanaic source, which was featured by the first crown, indicates that Jerusalem was divided, and you see the division primarily when you look at the Beis Hamikdash. The high Tana Sovar Lo Nishalkus Yushalayim Shvatim. The following Tana holds otherwise, that it was not divided amongst the Shvatim, and all property in Jerusalem is essentially under the ownership of all of Klal Yisrael. And it says in this source, Ein Maskirin Botim V'Yushalayim, literally it means we don't rent houses in Jerusalem. That means when people come thrice yearly to the pilgrimage of the three holidays, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, and people were coming from all over the country, you could not rent your Jerusalem house to someone else who was coming on Aliyas Regel. It's not bitnei she'enon shelahen. You might be living in a house, but it's not yours to rent out. So you would give it to whoever wants it, can move in without paying you. Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Shimon, Omer, af lo mitos. You couldn't even rent out the beds, because as far as he is concerned, the beds stood on the floor, and the floor on which the bed stood was not yours. Lefikach oirois kochim bali ushpizin noitlin oison bizra. Because of this, we'll call them homeowners in Jerusalem, even though the word owner is circumscribed. Nevertheless, they could not rent out their homes, and as a result of that, Oros Kochim, these are skins from the sacrifices. Sacrifice had part put on the altar, the meat was eaten, and then there were the skins. The skins of sacrifices Bali Ushpizin, those homeowners, Neutlin Oysan Bizra, would take them by force. In other words, the homeowners of Jerusalem, even though technically they weren't the owner of homes, but they felt that they had something coming to them. So they took these Oros Kochim Bizra. Bizra usually means by force. Of course, that requires some analysis. After all, we said you couldn't demand payment, it wasn't yours, so how did this operate? But it was some kind of understanding, at the very least, that they have something coming to them. Omar Abaye, Shma mino oirach aro lemishbak inish gulfa umashva beushpize. We see from here a point of proper conduct, orach aro, derech eretz, proper conduct, that if you're being hosted by somebody, that you would leave a gift with them. Something that strikes a chord of familiarity to many of us to this very day. What does Abaye recommend? He says gulfa is a earthenware flask, and mashcha is skins. It means if you happen to have slaughtered an animal and you had meat with you, you should leave the animal skins, bushpize, to your host. Omar Rava. And as we said before here, after completing the bracketed section, we go back to the issue of sales of holy items. Loi shanu, the rule that you're not allowed to descend in sanctity, in other words, to use the money that you receive from an item to buy an item of lesser sanctity. Elo shalom mochru shiva tuve ir b'maymet an shu'ir. Notice we use the phrase marking, you read this whole thing together, that the sale did not take place under the auspices of the seven tuve, or the seven town representatives, b'maymet an shu'ir, with the literally in the presence of the population, might mean with the them having the authority of the town population. If the sale was not done in that way, so then it has the limitation of ein morid in bekedusha. We don't descend in sanctity. Avol machru shiva tuvayir b'mayim b'nan shiir. If the sale of the item, whatever item we had mentioned earlier, had taken place with the approval of the seven town representatives, then afilu, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, lemishta bei shichra ulemishtach bei peri shapir domi, a synagogue that was sold under the authority of these seven town representatives, that building can then be used for drinking beer in it, or as Rashi says, you can use the money that you got for the sale of the shul. You can use the money for buying a bar, or and Rashi's lashon on the top is liknos bedomim, a place of shechor of beer, velaso shechor lishtos, a beer. A manufacturing site, or you could use the money to buy a place for spreading out fruits, so that the restriction that we had of the use of the money for something of lesser kedusha, that's only if the sale did not take place with the approval of the shiva tuvia. But if the structure was sold and you received money as a result of a sale under the authority of the Shiva Tuvayir, so the money does not have the restriction we mentioned before. You can use the money for buying something of lesser sanctity. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, we have a new marking on the side. You can see the the structural note with a house feature. These are shnei maisim hakshurim l'shimush b'mokoyim shoyapam beis haknesis. Two incidents involving the use of a place that had once been a synagogue. Ravino havi le'ahu tilo debei k'nishta. Ravino had in his possession a tilo, usually is a mound. Rashi says bayis horus, a place where there had a ruin was located, and it was a ruin that had once been a shul. So Ravina had this. He had a ruin that had once been a shul. Also lekame de Rav Ashi, he came to Rav Ashi with a question. Amar le mahu lemizra, can I plant this area. Omar le zil zavne mishiva tuve ho'ir b'maybet anshu'ir v'zar'ob. Acquire it, receive the approval of the seven town representatives, and then you can plant it. So that if one had purchased this ruin through with the authority of the Shiva Tuveir, you can even plant it. Rami Bar Abba, Have Koboni Bei Knishta. Rami was building a shul. Have Hahi Knishta Atika. There was an old shul there. Have Boi Limistere Ulasuye Livni Ukshuri Mino Viyuli Lahasam. Rami had a plan to knock down the old structure and to bring the bricks and beams from the old structure and use them as part of the construction of the new edifice. Yosef v'komibayale, and here he raises the analysis of this question. There is a teaching of Rav Chisda. Hod Rav Chisda. He came and asked, Mibayale wanted to analyze the teaching of Rav Chisda. The Omer Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda had said, Lo listor be knishto ad boni be knishto achriti. This teaching is found in the beginning of Maseches Bava Basra, where one is not allowed to knock down an old shul until a new shul is built. Hosom mishum psiusa. There, the reasoning is because of the fear of negligence, meaning that we're afraid that the new edifice will not be built. So that if they knock down the old one without having the new one there already, so they'll be left without a synagogue altogether. So you have a rule that Rav Chisda says that you're not allowed to knock down an old shul until a new one is already built. Ki hai gav nomai. What about in this case, where the purpose in knocking down the old shul is to use the very materials of it for the new shul? So that was the question that Rami Bar Abba was confronted with. Osalakame to Rav Papa the Osarle. He presented the question to Rav Papa and he forbade it. Lakame to Rav Huna the Osarle, and Rav Huna likewise forbade it. Omar Rava, Hai Bei Knishta. Before we go on, we have a marking that draws our attention to the topic heading and structural note on the side, the Nosei Mivne heading. A double underline is featured. Each word here represents Drachim Shoinim Shel Havoras Beis Knesses Lemishu Acher. Different methods of transferal of a shul to someone else. Haim Mutter, is it allowed? Up till now, we've presented the issue of selling a shul. So Rava says, a shul, hai bei knishta, chilufa uzvuno shari. The exchange of it, or the sale of it, is allowed. Well, the sale we've discussed already. You'll sell, let's say, Mr. A sells a shul to Mr. B, so Mr. A receives money, and so that the sanctity of the shul descends upon the money. Likewise, if you are exchanging a shul for something else, so whatever sanctity the shul had, that sanctity is now present on the item that you received in exchange for it. Ogora umashkona osir. Ogora is rental, and mashkona is offering a shul as collateral. That is forbidden. My taima, why is that? Bikdushoso koi, its sanctity remains. And as far as I understand this, there is nothing onto which the sanctity can said to be transferred. If we look in Rashi, on the upper part of the narrow lines, chalufi zvuni, chalo kedushoso al hachiluf, oyal abdomim, vuhu yetze min HaKadusha Lishtamishbo, that in the case of a sale, so the sanctity of the shul goes on to the money, and the shul loses its original sanctity, or in the case of an exchange, the item acquired receives the shul sanctity, and the original shul leaves that level of Kedusha. So that's why Chalufa and Zvuna, exchange and sales, are allowed, because the we're not losing a let's say a location for the kedusha to be transferred. Not so in the case of a rental or of a offering it as collateral. My assumption in this discussion is that when we speak about, let's say, renting the shul, we're talking about renting the building for some use other than continued use as a shul. Therefore, the problem arises that you're going to be giving the shul over to some use other than use for holy purposes. Where does the holiness of the shul go? And likewise, when you're offering it as collateral, so the lender might be end up using his mashkon for some purpose other than that of a shul. We continue in the Gemara. Livni nami chalufinu v'zvuninu shori. The Livni are bricks, the bricks of a shul. We say the same thing, that exchanging them for something or selling them, that is allowed. O zofinhu usur, but lending them out for some other use is forbidden. Hani mili ba tikta. This is true with regard to bricks that old bricks that were already part of a shul that had fallen down, that a shul that had been sanctified, used as a shul, and it may have fallen down, but you have these bricks and beams. Bricks that we mentioned, the livni. Avo bechadita less lon ba. But new bricks, they were bricks that were manufactured, but they haven't been built into a shul yet. You might have in mind to when you made the bricks, you had in mind for a shul. As Rashi says, shenase, they were made l'shem beis knesses. That is not enough to impart sanctity to the bricks. Ve'afilu l'man de'omar, and even according to an opinion that says hasmona milsahi, that designation does have significance. So you might think that new bricks that were made with a shul in mind is considered designation. Not so. Hani mili, when do we say that hasmona milsahi? Kegoin ha'oireg beged lemeis. If someone wove a garment to serve as a shroud. Now, just by way of introduction or background, a shroud, once the corpse is clothed in the shroud is forbidden to benefit from. So when we speak about designation as having significance, that would be true in the case of a garment that was woven for the dead. That once it was woven, it's not missing anything other than being put on the body of the corpse. Avol hocha, but with regard to the manufacture of bricks, the connection of a brick to a shul that's used for prayer is more distant than the connection of a newly woven beged for a mace. Avol hocha ketavui laorig domi veleka leman deomar. The case of a new brick, the manufacture of a brick, could be parallel to the spinning of fabric, the spinning of wool that eventually will be made into a shroud. And no one would say that if one spins wool with the intention of using that wool as eventually woven into a shroud, that the spun wool would have any restriction based on hasmona. It's too far removed from its eventual use. Likewise, the bricks, when you make a brick, it still is missing being built into the structure. And even then, if I understand things correctly, the structure, simply designated as a shul, is still a step away from its actually being used as a shul. So that
it's one thing that if you have a structure that's built and you want to designate it as a shul, that would come under the concept of hazmona, of designation, hazmona milsihi. But a brick that hasn't even been built into a structure is like the case of strands that are spun in anticipation of being woven into a garment that eventually would be dressed upon the corpse. It's too far removed from its ultimate use. And therefore, we would not impose any restriction on, if it's the case of the strings or the bricks. Matona. Now, the giving of a gift. Rashi says, Nosnu b'nei o'ir beis ha'knesis l'tashmi she'chol. The town folk gave a shul as a gift to be used for non-sanctified purposes. Pligi bo Rav Achav Ravina. We have a machlokis regarding the giving of a shul as a gift. Chad osar v'chad shori. One prohibits and one allows. Man do osar, the one who prohibits, v'mai tifka kedushasa. Through what will the Kedusha be removed? Now, we said before that when we speak about these transfers, the transfer of sanctity has to have something on which to set. But in this case, on what would the sanctity set? There is nothing in exchange. Uman deshori, he who allows it, ilav dehavid lehanomine, if the giver of the gift had not received Hano from the receiver, lohavi yohiv le, he wouldn't be giving a gift. People don't give gifts out of the blue. Hodar havi le matona kizvini, since when a gift is given, it's given in effect as an exchange for something received, so it has the characteristic of a sale. And we said before that sales are allowed. So according to this opinion, superficially, the gift giving resembles sales, and since we said sales are allowed, so gift giving of a shul will also be allowed. As far as the specific issue of what will the sanctity set upon, that I'm going to leave as an open issue. But the Man d'Omar, the one who forbids, he seems to be preoccupied by that factor. He doesn't necessarily deny the svora of the matir. He doesn't necessarily deny that when a gift is given, of course it's given in exchange for having received something prior to the gift giving. But nevertheless, the question remains, on what would the sanctity settle? As you can see, we have a slash mark indicating that that which follows is a new trend of thought. Before we continue, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading where we've written Tashmishe Mitzvah Nizrokin, Tashmishe Kedusha Nignozin. There are two categories that we are going to deal with. Tashmishe Mitzvah, items that were used in order to fulfill a mitzvah. And we'll see examples in the source itself, a sukkah, a lulav, a shofar. These are items that don't have inherent sanctity. Then we have another category of Tashmishe Kedusha. These are items that have inherent sanctity. Things like holy scrolls, tefillin, mezuzahs. These, they have the name of the Almighty as part of them. So they have inherent sanctity. What do we do with them when they fall into disuse? So when it comes to the Tashmishe Mitzvah, they can be thrown out. And here we're dealing with letter of the law. We're not dealing with halacha lemaisa. Of course, when we deal with our shiurim in the context of Gemara markings, daf yomi shiurim, we never attempt to convey what your actual practice should be. Learning Gemara serves as the basis of those sources. But here we're dealing with letter of the law as the Gemara presents it. I'm not saying that if you have a lulav and esrog, that you just dump it in the garbage, but technically speaking, you could do that. With regard to Tashmishi Kedusha, Nignozim, they must be buried. Tonu Rabbana. Now we go into the Gemara itself. Tashmishi Mitzvah Nizrokin, Tashmishi Kedusha Nignozim. items that were used for mitzvah fulfillment can be thrown out. Items that were used for that have inherent sanctity cannot. The Eluhein Tashmishe Mitzvah. And by the way, when we said things that have inherent sanctity, that is too limited an expression. It's a reference to items that were in service of items that had inherent sanctity. Things that have inherent sanctity, that's obvious that you can't throw them out. But even items that were used in service of those kind of items are to be buried, not to be thrown out. So we say, what are the Eluhein Tashmishe Mitzvah? Sukkah, Lulav, Shofar, Tzitzis. The Eluhein Tashmishe Kedusha. Dluskami, these are cases or bags for putting into them Sfarim, Tfilin, Umezuzos. Sfarim, we mentioned earlier today, were scrolls of Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Tfilin and mezuzahs, a tfilin, what we might call a tfilin zekel or a tfilin bag, and the case that holds the mezuzah that you put on your doorpost, that is the what we call the dluskami. The tik shel sefer Torah, the nartik shel tfilin, that which contains a Sefer Torah. In different communities, there are different customs. Some have a type of cloth draping over the Sefer Torah. Some communities have the practice of containing the Sefer Torah in a type of solid box. The Nartik Shel Tfilin Rutsuo Sehen. And Rashi points out that the term tik and nartik are one and the same. The term tik is appropriate for something that's long, elongated. A nartik is something that is not elongated. So you have the nartik that holds the tefillin. We mentioned before there's a deluskami that is relevant to tefillin and a nartik that's relevant to tefillin. So we'll simply say, for our purposes, items that hold the tefillin. Today we have things that would fall into these categories, like a tefillin zekel we mentioned, a little bag that holds the tefillin, and we have boxes that we put around the tefillin themselves. Often you find people have plastic type boxes that contain the tefillin. Omar Rava, and here we have a new marking on the side under the Mivneh heading. We have Memros Shel Rava Benosi Al, comments made of Rava in this context. And we have lettering Aleph and Beis. These are Shnei Mikrim She Bohem Hoya Hava Minol Rava De Medubar Betashmish De Tashmish. These first two have something in common, where the thinking was that the item under discussion wasn't something that was in service of a tashmish of Kedusha, but it was more removed. It was a tashmish of a tashmish. And that would have lesser sanctity, and possibly one would be allowed to throw it away. But we will reveal in each one of these cases, not so. Omar Rava, may Reish Hava Amino, at first I used to think, Hai Kursaya, Rashi says, Bimo Shel Eitz. Bimo is a raised platform made of wood, and here we're talking about it in the context of a shul, in the context of Sifrei Torah. There was an item referred to as a Kursaya, was a Tashmish de Tashmish Hu Vishori. The Kursaya was a raised platform upon which a cloth would be placed, and upon that they would place down the Sefer Torah. It would be what we would consider today the type of table that we read the Sefer Torah on. So it could be that's what we're referring to here. Nevertheless, the point being is that the Sefer Torah was not placed directly on this wooden elevation, but rather there was this wooden elevation, and upon that a cloth would be placed, and upon that they would place the Sefer Torah, making the wooden elevation itself something that you could would be called Tashmish to Tashmish, and you'd have more allowances with regard to that. You could possibly throw it out if it falls into disuse. However, Kevan de Chazina de Moisvi Iluya Sefer Torah, however, Rava says, I noticed that they would place a Sefer Torah at times directly on it without a cloth, Amino, I then understood, or I then figured, Tashmish Kedusha of Osir, it has the status of Tashmish Kedusha, it serves the item of sanctity, and hence you cannot merely throw it out. The Omar Rovo, Meresh Hava Amino, originally I used to think, Hai Prisa, Tashmish de Tashmish Hu. Now, as far as what Prisa is, there is a machloikis between Rashi and Tosfos on this matter. Rashi says that it's a curtain that was suspended within the Oron Kodesh, within the Holy Ark, of the Shul, of course. According to Tosfos, as we said, it's a curtain that's hung outside of it. So that Prisa, Rava's thought was a Tashmish to Tashmish. Kevan de Chazino de Aifi Lei Umanchi Sifro Ibuya. I noticed that at times they would fold it underneath a Sefer Torah itself. Amino, I figure Tashmish Kedusha Huva Osir. It has the higher status of an actual Tashmish de Kedusha, and therefore it would be Osir to throw it out. So we see two cases where Rava was looking at an item based on its usual use, but realizing that it has an alternative, higher level use, hence that's enough to categorize it as Tashmish de Kedusha, not merely Tashmish de Tashmish. The Omar Rava, Hai Tivusa de Irpat, the Oron Kodesh of a Sefer Torah that fell apart. Mevde teva zutrusi shori, to use the materials, the wood, to build a smaller Aron Kodesh, that would be allowed. Kursaya osir, however, to use it as a kursaya, and by the way, we saw kursaya mentioned just a few lines above, we call that bimoshel eitz, that is a lesser level kedusha, and hence it would be forbidden. And if you have any trouble finding where that was mentioned, so by all means use the little arrow that you see to the right-hand side of the Gemara text. You align it with the arrow above. The Omar Rava, Hai Prisa de Bola, the Prisa, made mention of that just a couple lines above as well. The curtain material, the fabric material that is used to be suspended from the Oron, if it gets worn out, Bola is worn out, Hai Prisa de Bola, Lemevde Prisa, to use the remnant material, the Sifri Shori Lechumshin Osir. If you want to make it into a material for Sifri Torah, so that would be allowed. It could be that we're talking about making a smaller curtain for the purpose of Sforim, of Torah scrolls, that would be allowed. However, for Chumashim, no. Chumashim are scrolls that contain only one of the five books of the Chumash in it. So that a safe Sifri here is what we would call today a Sefer Torah. Chumashim are individual scrolls of the individual books of the Chamisha Chumashi Torah. In all of these cases, by the way, we're talking about scrolls that were written on parchment with ink, and they have sanctity to them. So the worn-out Prisa, if you want to continue using the remnant pieces in a capacity that it was used for similarly, for Sforim, for Sifri Torah, that's allowed, but to use them for Chumashim would be forbidden, Chumashim having less sanctity. The Omar Rava, Hani Zvili de Chumshi, the Kamtari de Sifri. Zvili, Rashi says, is like dluskimi, and we saw the word dluskimi mentioned earlier in the Tanaic source above, which was a type of sack. So zvili de chumshi, the sacks used for holding chumashim, and kamtari de sifri, boxes used for holding sifri Torah, Tashmish Kedusha Ninhu V'Nignozim. They have the status of Tashmish Kedusha, and hence when they fall into disuse, they are to be buried. Pshita, that seems to be obvious. Mahu Detemo Hani Lav L'Chavoy Davidon L'Nturi Ba'almo Avidi. One might have thought that they are not there for honor purposes. They're just storage entities. They're guarding. The Turi means to guard them, to keep them from being damaged. Komash Malon, so Rava tells us that whatever the case is, they have the status of Tashmish Kedusha. Hahu Beiknishta Diudoi Romoi David Psiach Lahu Idruno. This, by the way, is a new discussion. This discussion concerns Tumas Mace. Now, how this discussion comes in over here, it is because a reference will be made to the Oron Kodesh. And since before we were discussing Oron Kodesh, so that will be the basic connection. And then after this section, we will come back to the comments of Rava that are relevant to what we've been discussing before. Or in other words, other comments of Rava dealing with Tashmishei Kedusha with Sifrei Torah. But in the meantime, this gets a little bit off the topic in the sense that we're going to be focusing on rules regarding Tumas Meis and make reference to an Oron Kodesh. So what we'll be describing before we read the Gemara involves a corpse that's found in a room adjacent to a synagogue, to a sanctuary in which people daven. And the problem here is that there was an opening from the room into the main sanctuary where people would daven. Kohanim are prohibited from being exposed to defilement of the dead. In other words, corpse defilement. And corpse defilement, even though the body is in one room, if there's an opening between the room and another room, the defilement will pass through that opening. So in the course of this Gemara, a suggestion will be made so as to enable the Kohanim to enter the Shul sanctuary. Something should be put to block the window that connected the room in which the body was to the main sanctuary. What was suggested? So we'll see in the Gemara, a suggestion was made to place the Oron Kodesh over there. And because the Oron Kodesh was perceived as a large structure, I don't want to use the word vessel because may be counterproductive, but if you use the word vessel, it's a large vessel that we think is something that's not moved. It's once you place the Oron Kodesh in its spot, it will stand there permanently in that location. And therefore, by taking the Oron Kodesh and placing it at that opening, it would effectively block the tumah based on a rule called Kli Eitz Ha'osu L'Nachas. Wooden vessels, even though in general they do not block tumah because they themselves absorb tumah, and that which absorbs tumah cannot serve as a block against tumah. But if it's a Kli Eitz Ha'osu L'Nachas, if it's a large heavy wooden vessel that remains in its location permanently, it can block tumah. That's the initial thinking. That will be brought into question as we go through the Gemara. So with that background in mind, we turn back to the Gemara. Hahu Beiknishta Dihudoi Romoi. There was a shul that was in Bavel that was built by Jews that originally came from Rome. Dava Psiach Lahu Idruna. The Beis Knesses opened into a room. Idruna is a room. Davin Mochis Bay Mace. In that room, there was a corpse. Vahavu Bo Kani Lemeel Litzli Hossam. And the Kehanim wanted to enter the shul, the sanctuary where prayer took place. And by virtue of the fact that there was a corpse in this adjacent room, and there was an opening between the two locations. There was a window that opened, there was a wall separating them with a window in it. The Kohanim could not go into the shul. Asu amru le l'Rava. So the public came and told Rava about this problem. Omar Lahu, maybe the Kohanim themselves told Rava about this problem, and Omar Lahu, Rava addressed them. Dalu Tevusa, take the Oron Kodesh, that's that unit that holds the Sifrei Torah, the Holy Ark, if you will, Osvuha, and place it against that opening. Oron Kodesh is generally not moved, and therefore it would have the category, it would be considered, classified as a Kli Eitz, a wooden entity, a wooden vessel, Ha'aslu Nachas. It's made for permanent positioning, permanent staying there. Ukli Eitz Ha'aslu Nachas Eino Mekabel Tuma V'chotzitz B'fnei Atuma. And the rule states that a Kli Eitz Ha'aslu Nachas is not capable of receiving tumma, of absorbing tumma, and it also blocks against tumma, which is what we need over here. Omru le rabbonon le rava. So the rabbonon, upon hearing Rava's suggestion, they said to him, "V'ha zimnin de metatli le ki monach sefer Torah iluya." But on occasion, teva is moved while the sefer Torah is inside of it. And then it becomes classified as something else, a vessel that's moved not only when empty but also when filled. It's a kli shemitata mole v'reikom, both empty and full, and that makes it such that it's a mekabel tuma. And Ihochi, so Rava says, if that's the case, lo efsher, so then that is not the solution. And I don't know if there is any other solution for the Kehanim to enter the shul as long as the corpse is in that room. Omer Mar Zutra, mitpachoi svarim shebolu, oisin tachrichin lemeis mitzvah, vizuhi gnizasan. The mitpachos, the cloths that are used for holy scrolls, for Sifrei Torah, if they get worn out, they can be used as shrouds for a meis mitzvah. Now, a meis mitzvah, technically speaking, is a body that's found without any relatives or people that are charged with its burial. That's a technical definition. Whether this is truly restricted to that particular case or not, that has to be further investigated. But the mitpachos of the svarim, the cloths that were used for Sifrei Kodesh, can be made into shrouds for a meis mitzvah, v'zu hi gnizasan, and that is their burial. Because we're talking about these cloths that were used for the svarim got worn out, so they need to be buried. So you can bury them together with the meis mitzvah, and that is a fulfillment of the halacha requiring their burial. The Omar Rava Sefer Torah Shebola Goinzin Oisoi Eitzel Talmud Chacham. A Sefer Torah that got worn out, so what do? Well, it has to be buried. So Rava says that it shall be buried next to a Torah scholar. The Afilu Shoyne Halachos, even if his level of scholarship is such that he learned Mishnayos without having learned the Gemara that explains the Mishnayos. And Rashi explains, points this out at the bottom. Afilu Shoyne Halachos Klomar Afilu Lo Shimesh Tamid Chom B'Vashas U'B'Gemara Ela B'Mishnayos U'B'Brisis. He hasn't learned the Gemara that explains the Mishnayos. He just knows Tanaic sources like Mishnayos and Brises. That's enough to classify him as a Talmud Chacham for this purpose of having worn out Sifrei Torah buried with him. Omar Rav Acha Bar Yankov U Bikli Cheres. The Sifrei Torah that are worn out, when they're buried, they should be put into clay vessels. The clay vessel will serve to preserve them and not immediately not decomposing rapidly. Shenemar unesatim b'kli cheres leman yamdu yomim rabim. In Yirmiyahu, you can see that a kli cheres is featured as something to preserve. There he was talking about documents that would be preserved for a long time because they were in clay vessels. Rav Papi Mishmei de Rava. So Omar, Rav Popi, Mishmei de Rava. We have here two statements in the name of Rava. One is that of Rav Popi, and the opposite version will be taught by Rav Popa in the name of Rava. So Omar Rav Popi, Mishmei de Rava, Mibei Knishta Lebei Rabbanon Shari, exchanging taking a shul and converting it into a base medrash. Bei Rabbanon is a place where the Rabbanon study Torah. So you're going to, the issue of converting a shul, a synagogue, into a base medrash, that's allowed. Mibei Rabbanon Lebei Knishta Oser. But the other way around is not allowed. That would be considered lowering its sanctity. Rav Papa Mishmei de Rava Masni Ipon Rav Papa, in the name of Rava, teaches the opposite. Omar Rav Acha. We continue at the top of Chof Sayin Omar Aleph. Kavosei de Rav Popi Mistabro. Rav Popi's approach, which puts a Bei Rabbanon on a higher level, is most likely. The Omer of Yeshua ben Levi, Beis HaKnesses Mutur La Soy Soy Beis HaMedrash, by virtue of the fact that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says this point, that a shul, a synagogue, can be made into a base medrash, therefore, Shema Mino, it shows that Rav Popi's approach is more likely. Dorash Bar Kapora. My Dichtiv. Bar Kapora holds forth, he teaches regarding the Pasuk in Melachim Beis concerning the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash by Nebuzradon, which was an officer under Nebuchadnezzar's reign. It says, "Vayisroif es beis Hashem ves beis Hamelech ves kol bote Yerushalayim ve es kol bayis gadol soraf boesh." Now, this pasuk, you can see, we have underlines as the Gemara continues. The Gemara breaks down this pasuk, identifying each one of the items. Beis Hashem, and if it was rather burnt, the Beis Hashem ze beis Hamikdash. Beis Hamelech referred to in the pasuk, Elu Paltrin Shemaf. That was the palace. You see the word palterin and the word palace. You can see a similarity in those words. Palace of the king. The es kol bote Yerushalayim, and all the houses in Jerusalem. Well, that's kimashma'on, as it sounds. It means as it is. He burnt the dwellings of Jerusalem. Es kol bayis godol soraf bo'esh, and all large or important structures he burnt in the fire. And here you have a machlokas. This machlokas ties into the Gemara we had at the top. Man di Omar. Chad Omar, one says, Mokom shemegadlin boiter, the word godol means to increase, to raise in it Torah, the place of Torah study. V'chad Omar, Mokom shemegadlin botfil, and the other opinion says, the place that prayer is conducted. Mandomer Torah, the opinion that says that bayis godol is Torah, and how do we see godol in the context of Torah? Dechtiv Hashem chofetz leman tzidkoi yagdil Torah v'yadir. The word yagdil is dashed, underlined, in conjunction with Torah. Umadomer tefila, dechtiv saprono hagdoilois asher osa Elisha. Here the king was asking to be told about the great workings of Elisha. The Elisha de Ovad Brachamihu David, and Elisha's workings, his miracles, were done through prayer. So that you see, the gedolos of Elisha are associated with prayer, with the Rachmi. Tistayim, the Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who diomar mokum shemegadlin by Torah. Let us conclude that the term Godol is associated, that is associated with Torah, is authored by Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. See, we circled a couple names just before Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and who said what was not clear at that point in the Gemara. It just said Chad Omar, one says this way and one says that way, but who said what? So here the Gemara wants to conclude that it's Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi that described by his Godol as a place of increasing of Torah study. The Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Beis HaKnesses Mutter La Soysoy Beis HaMedrash. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says that it's Mutter to convert a shul into a Torah study hall, a base medrash, indicating that that's a higher level. The Torah study is gadol, is great, is the higher level. Shema mino. This is conclusive. Now, I want to point out something here, that there's an issue that comes up when you deal with psak halacha, when you deal with coming to halachic conclusions. Again, we're not talking halacha lemaisa right now. We're not talking on a practical applied halacha level, but in terms of concluding halacha. When you have a machloikis between different authorities, one authority is generally considered there are many instances, many examples of certain authorities being considered greater than others. Here we have we had earlier machlokas Rav Poppy and Rav Papa concerning conversion of a shul into a base medrash or vice versa. The Gemara ruled above like Rav Poppy, and why? Because Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says what Rav Poppy had said, that you're allowed to go from a shul, from a synagogue, up to a base medrash in converting its use. Who argued with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? Well, we see over here that it's Rabbi Yochanan that argues with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And Tosfos here concludes that it seems that when you have a machlokas between Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan, we will go like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And even though it's the great Rabbi Yochanan that argues with him, and it's pointed out elsewhere in the Shas that Rabbi Yochanan was truly a great figure in terms of psak halacha, because you find that when there's a machlokas between the likes of Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, we would paskin like Rabbi Yochanan. And here you have someone that would seem to carry greater strength even than Rabbi Yochanan, and that's Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. That, of course, is an interesting issue in and of itself that gets into the realm of rules of psak, of rules of halachic conclusions. That having been said, before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.